Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying tuned to Let's Face the Issues. We're talking with Senator Aaron Bean. Senator Bean is a representative in Florida, the Florida Senate, District 4, and yet he represents the whole state. I don't mind telling you, I recommend Senator Bean, and I'm thankful that God has placed him in the position that he's in. Senator Bean, I was talking with a representative a few weeks ago. We had a dialogue and discussion by way of the radio broadcast. He made a very bold statement, and I am thankful for men like that, and I will not call his name, but I am thankful that we have men like yourself and others that, and you mentioned Senator Sturgill a moment ago, a staunch Christian, and I'm thankful for those that we have in the House and the Senate that's willing to place God first. But this particular House of Representatives member said, I place God first, and in doing so, I place our Constitution and what the Florida Constitution, the U.S. Constitution says, for me to adhere to that. When I swear to uphold the Constitution, I'm obligated before God to uphold what the Constitution says. Therefore, I cannot introduce a bill, sponsor a bill, or vote for a bill that does not honor God first and our Constitution. Do you think that's a pretty good statement?
It's a great statement. No, we all take an oath. That's the first thing you do before you even take your seat. You're given that oath and to uphold the Constitution. And then, you know, the thing is, a lot of what you're talking about to me is just common sense. Common sense on the bill we just talked about. Does it make sense to have parents involved in their children's medical decisions? It does. And so it's just me, I have to scratch my head sometimes when people oppose parents making the decisions about the medical decisions of a minor.
Yes. And we have other issues, Senator, and we'll talk about two or three of them in the time that we have afforded today on this broadcast. One of them that, as you know, I'm very passionate about, I'm a Second Amendment rights believer. I find that in the Word of God, God created the doctrine of self-defense. He gave that to us in the Word of God, called the Castle Doctrine. Many listening may not be aware of that, but I've written the book on that subject, the doctrine of self-defense. It is codified in the Scripture, confirmed by the courts to be carried out by we the people. But right after, Senator, right after the Parkland shooting, school shooting, a couple of years ago, a bill was introduced. It was the red flag law. There's 17 states in the United States of America that have the red flag laws. The state of Florida is one of them. We've had some 2,600 cases, I believe, instances where the red flag law has intruded upon the First, the Second, the Fourth, and the 14th Amendment of our Bill of Rights. And I'm wondering, I don't know exactly where that stands, but there's a bill in the House, and I think there's a similar bill in the Senate, if I'm not mistaken, that deals with the right to keep and bear arms, and that will, in essence, if I can use this term, will gut the knee-jerk law that was passed in the House right after, or in the Florida Senate and House, right after the Parkland shooting. Could you clarify that in my thinking, and for our listeners, where do we stand on the red flag laws in the state of Florida? Is it good or bad, in your opinion? What should we do, and how should we, the people, respond? Because I know on the House side, House Bill 6003 has been introduced, but I know that it's not getting any traction at all because of the liberals in the state of Florida that's lobbying against it. What do our people need to hear and know and understand that will help us with that?
Well, I think it was a tremendous, it was one of the greatest tragedies in our state, the Parkland shooting. And to go through the details and to go through the timeline of how government failed, that is a testimony of government failing on several different levels. Not only the red flags of a dangerous individual that needed help, that needed really to be locked up. I mean, he gave every indication that he had intent to harm students and others, and it seemed like government didn't take him seriously. And then on the actual response when it engaged, last month, the Senate Governor DeSantis. It was so outrageous. Governor DeSantis removed the sheriff in that county, and that sheriff appealed to the Senate, and the Senate sat as the appellate jurisdiction of whether or not to confirm the DeSantis decision to remove or not to remove. And so we went into to really in-depth discussion of the response, and that's another topic right there. We confirmed, the Senate confirmed that removal was appropriate concerning.
And I, for one, applaud your decision on that, Senator, and the decision of the Senate.
Well, that was good, but that goes to the testimony of how tragic it was. And so after Parkland, there was a major rewrite of how we go forth of arming citizens. The hot spot of that debate that came out as a source of contention among many people on many Republicans that found it to be a source of contention was the raising of the age of purchase for a weapon to the age of 21. We felt, many felt, that because that shooter was 19 and went and purchased a weapon to do harm, and the first gun store refused to sell to him because he felt that something was wrong with that individual, rightly so. But had we had that in place before, we possibly could have prevented that tragedy. We still preserve the right of a father or mom to give a weapon to an individual, but the actual purchase needs to be 21. That was the hot spot. We did also pass so-called red flag, where that if an individual is felt not to be sane enough to handle a weapon, that a family member or a friend can go before a court and say, I think this individual is a danger to himself or society. Law enforcement can seize their weapons, but that individual then gets a right to go before a judge and to present evidence that they indeed are sane. And so that also was a source of contention, but I think it was it's very logical. We all want the right to protect ourselves and to bear arms as it is in our Constitution. But for those that aren't sane, that don't have the legal capacity to handle a weapon and that have a propensity to do harm to themselves or others, those are the ones that we want to keep weapons out of their hands. So there's lots of bills that are introduced. I know those on the other side of the aisle would like to ban weapons, would like to restrict people's right to bear arms. And so given the conservative nature of the legislature right now, I think the likelihood of any of those bills passing is not a likely possibility.
Well, one of those bills that, and I cannot call the number that's in the House, and I don't know if there's a matching bill in the Senate. One of those bills that is another one of the several gun bills, as you know, in the House and the Senate for this legislative session. And one of those gun bills, I believe, introduced by a liberal Democrat, basically would take weapons away because it says it's the universal background check. That sounds palatable on the surface. Universal background check for our listeners just simply means that if I own a weapon, legally own the weapon, and I want to give it to my wife and do not do a background check, I could be charged as a felon and prosecuted under the laws if I were to give that weapon to my son, et cetera, et cetera. That's the danger of so-called universal background check. Our listeners may or may not be aware, Senator, that in 2018, I believe there were some 80,000 applications for weapons, and they were 80,000 of them that were turned down, and only 44 of them were prosecuted. So we have the laws on the books now that says that if you are a felon or if you are ineligible to own a weapon, you cannot get one. So if you make an application for one, that is a felony on the face of it, but we're not prosecuting the laws that are on the books. And I say all of that, and it's not to put you on the spot, Senator. Don't want you to think that at all. But right here in the state of Florida, for example, early part of this year, a young man that happened to be working with a legal job, as I would call it, working, and yet became disenchanted with life, disappointed, went to his doctor to see what the doctor could suggest for his depression. And the doctor asked him a few questions about his depression, and he gave the doctor the correct answer. The doctor said, well, have you ever thought about taking your own life? He said, well, that's crossed my mind. And he was just talking with his doctor, not realizing that information would be uploaded to law enforcement. The next morning, the law enforcement at his door before daylight confiscated his weapons, handcuffed him, put him in jail. He stayed in jail for almost 1 month. And now he's gone through the past 6 months just trying to get his legal weapons back and to get his record cleared. Since we're in the era where everything you say to your doctor is uploaded and can be viewed as being a medical or mental issue, especially, Senator, when it comes to our veterans, where they're having the PTSD and other problems, I think we need to be very, very careful with the state's right to take away the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, 14th Amendment rights. So I'm for some type of modification of that, very frankly, on the red flag laws. I'm for some type of modification to, and I understand what happened after the Parkland shooting. It was a knee-jerk process, and many were all still concerned about what had happened, and passed legislation, I believe, that went a little too far, because you could pick up the phone and say, that preacher is out there on St. Augustine Road waving his weapon, and we need to check him out. I could be picked up without due process, put in jail, and the state law says up to 14 days, and then I have to defend my right to get my weapon back. So with that being said, I know you have a horrific burden on your back in the legislative work that you carry out for us, and I'm thankful. There's another question, Senator, dealing with the hurricane shelters and many people that need hurricane shelter during the hurricane season have animals and pets. And I believe there's a bill that's been introduced that will respond to that question and that problem. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Dr. Bud, that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. You know what? Nothing breaks my heart. Well, there's a hell of things that break my heart, but when we saw animals left behind during evacuations, not only animals left behind, but chained animals with rising floodwaters, and it's very it's just disheartening to see that. I'm an animal lover, and want to see a better way to go forward with it. So I've actually introduced a bill that tells counties, all counties right now, this is not in in our statutes right now, all counties must have a place where people can go where they can also bring animals, their dogs, their cats. The good news is we've written it in such a way where if they will include this in their emergency preparations going forward, then the federal government will recognize that, and FEMA will reimburse them for the cost of having these shelters. We've seen vast improvements in counties recognizing that that people have pets. You have to accommodate people that have no other place to go, and so that's one of the bills that we've launched this year, and we've gotten some great feedback. And we look forward to that passing and codifying it in law, where people don't have to worry that if the hurricane's coming, they've got a place to go and they can bring Fido too.
Bring Fido. About meow meow also. Senator Bean, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question with that. And I am I'm not opposed to pets or animals, and I am in agreement that there needs to be a place where they can be safely taken care of. Is it clarified in that bill? I've not read that bill. Is it clarified in that bill that it would not be across the board with all hurricane shelters, but in specificity, shelters that would accept pets?
Correct. It doesn't say every shelter has to be pet-friendly. It just says a county shall have at least one. And, of course, with a big county like Duval, they could have multiple. But, you know, if you have a pet and you have to evacuate, the first thing you're looking for is, where do I go that will accept my pet. We've had examples in Florida where you had to, you couldn't evacuate to your local shelter. You had to go counties away because if you have a pet, they weren't welcome. And so, in fact, I visited one with the Dorian evacuation, and it's just a place at the shelter where an animal has a kennel or someplace can be put up. If it's a service dog, they're already welcome. So if somebody has a service dog or a support animal, those animals are already welcome in most places already, according to federal law. But this would just say that we need to accommodate people that have pets.
Senator Bean, another question. Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. We're interviewing today Senator Aaron Bean, Senator from the state of Florida, District 4. And Senator Bean and I have been talking about some of the bills that are in the House and the Senate, especially in the Senate, working its way through the committee process to be debated on the open floor in the legislative session beginning in January. Senator Bean, one of those bills, and it's not one that you introduced, thank the Lord, but Senator Bean, you're aware of a bill that was introduced by, I believe it's Senator Torres, Democrat, that would nullify the Electoral College for the state of Florida. And it would base the state's vote simply on the popular vote and not on the Electoral College. Are you familiar with that, and could you speak to that for a moment?
Well, first of all, and you know this, Dr. Youngblood, because you've walked the halls of Tallahassee, you know that there'll be a few thousand bills introduced every legislative session.
Yes.
And many of them will die without ever getting a hearing. And I'm hopeful that this is one of those bills that will die without getting a hearing. Because what that bill says is, Florida, your vote will depend on what New York City and California does. That bill says that Florida's right now 29. I think it's going to be growing to 31 or 33 come next census as Florida continues to grow. But what that bill says is, Florida, your vote will be dependent on what the national vote does, which is the same as saying your vote's not going to count here in Florida, what we decide as a state. Florida, as you know, is one of the most purplest states. Also, is we're very almost evenly divided between red and blue. So that state, that bill would just, I think, be a going backwards, would take our state backwards and tell everybody your vote really doesn't count. We have to wait and see what happens. You can vote, but it's just going to go with the national vote, which is, to me, nuts. How about that?
Extremely dangerous, absolutely. Our founding fathers were very, very wise, and God, I believe, gave them that wisdom to develop for us the Electoral College system. And yet, as you know, across the nation, there's a major push today to the socialist, Marxist Democrats, as I call them, to eliminate the Electoral College system and put it on a popular vote. If that ever happens, Senator, and you're aware of this, and our listeners need to be aware of it, if that ever takes place, God forbid that it would, our major leadership in Washington would be determined by the left coast and the right coast of the United States of America. Middle America and everything in between would have no voice in the vote. Senator, I know our time is rapidly dissipating. There is some legislation that's in the till, if you will, to be voted on, and it's something to do with vaping. What are we doing in the state of Florida to curtail and to make illegal this thing that's called electronic cigarettes, e-cigarettes? We've had now over 2,000 cases. There's been, if I'm not mistaken, the last count was 100 or 120 deaths as a result of that. And just exactly where is that legislation? What does it do? And what do we need to do as citizens to see that something is passed in the state of Florida to curtail or stop that?
Well, there is discussion going on about vaping. We continue to discover how dangerous it is. And we had in front of my committee, which is Health and Human Services Appropriations, the Surgeon General, who painted a very dire picture of the lungs of otherwise healthy individual that that this vaping does tremendous damage, much worse than we ever envisioned. So there is a bill that would raise the age of purchase for vaping products and really all tobacco products to 21. That's what's out there now. I know there's others that want to just ban it completely. I don't know if that's a realistic right now, but raising the age of purchase may be something the legislature considers this year.
Well, I'm prayerful that it will, because I've done mega, and may I say again, mega research on that subject. And some, based on the statistical data, 78% of those that have gotten in trouble, i.e. physical maladies with vaping, 78% were vaping THC and not tobacco products or the flavored products, 78%. So it's a way to get under the radar with in the public, openly puffing pot, as I call it. And
yeah.
I'm prayerful that something can be done to curtail that, because all of the, I would just say, legitimate investigatory work done on that subject of smoking marijuana and or vaping it in either event, there's major research that shows that it destroys the ability for the future of that individual to be cognizant and be a healthy participant in society. Senator,
well,
there's
Dr.
another.
Blood, I want to brag on you, because you and I have had this debate, and thank goodness we're on the same team. How dangerous the drug marijuana is, that it seems to be enjoying status right now as a medicinal drug, and that's the veil of which it came into our state. You predicted on this program that should it pass as medicine, that you said that it would only be a matter of a very brief time before those same folks come back and say, we want full-blown recreational marijuana. And that is what's happening as we speak. They are gathering petitions to put that on the ballot, and that may be something that's not official yet, that they will have it. But they are getting close, Dr. Youngblood, and that's a prediction you made as the line of what's right in society is continued to get blurred. It's a prediction you made. If we went in that direction, then we sure did.
Senator Bean, let me say to you and to our listeners, those that are getting the petitions have already gone beyond the 776,000 petitions needed. They have that. They've already submitted the 90-word ballot initiative terminology to the courts for approval. And I have read the terminology in that 90-word ballot initiative. And if what we saw in November 2016, where the medical marijuana fiasco passed by 71%, then if that's any indication of where we will be in November of 2020, it will pass again. And I'm prayerful that it does not, but all the indicators are there. And what we're finding in the state of Colorado, the state of California, Seattle, the state of Washington, Oregon, and with 33 states that already have either medical marijuana or recreational marijuana, we're finding major, major, major fiasco in relationship to it. In the state of Colorado, crime has gone up some 547%. That's the combination of all crime statistical data. And they're now looking back and saying, you know, what have we done to ourselves as a state? And I am fearful that we'll see that in 2 to 5 years for the state of Florida and say, what have we done to our citizens? Speak to this issue for a moment. I'm glad you touched on that, Senator. What we're finding is more and more constitutional amendment initiatives that I believe we're circumventing our constitutional republic representative form of government by doing that. Am I right or wrong? Is this something that I'm seeing that no one else is addressing?
You nailed it, Dr. Youngblood. You nailed it. It's just it's people not getting fully engaged and not reading the fine print of who they're voting for, what they're voting for, and it comes full circle on facing the issues of why, you know, your monologue just hit on a whole bunch of things of why it truly matters who we vote for. It truly matters that we've got to investigate and just know what side they're going to be on as they go forward. for every decision you see an elected official make, especially at a state level, there's hundreds that you don't see that they're making behind the scenes of what bills heard, what bills not heard, what advances or amendments. And so that's why, Dr. Youngblood, you're on the front lines, and we want to invite everybody to continue to be engaged, to listen, to pay attention federally, locally, and at the state level.
I'm thankful for that, and I pray that we'll be able to continue to do so. Senator, there's one other issue that I would like to ask you a question about. I believe it's Senate Bill 170. It's the Federal Immigration Enforcement Bill called the Rule of Law Adherence Act. It will help enforce the laws of immigration. Tell us about that bill and where it stands in committees and the pros and cons of it.
It passed last year, and that's banning sanctuary cities in our state. That was an important rule of law. Cities and counties had the ability to thumb their nose up and choose which federal laws they're going to participate in and which they're not. And so we passed that, and I'm excited about that as it goes forward. That was one of Governor DeSantis' number one issues. It was a bean bill originally,
right.
And then last year, Senator Gruters, who was also our party chairman for the Republican Party, got behind it, pushed it. DeSantis jumped in, and we were able to pass that. That was good news, and you were involved in that last year as well. I know we're about to adjourn. I want to brag to everybody, if they haven't gone to Tools for a Time, if they love working in the yard, that is just a fun place to go to. Tools for a Time. I love just walking down and looking at all the tools and all the innovations in taking care of your yard and the management over there. I'm big fans of Tools for a Time. So I want to encourage everybody to go by and just walk the halls.
That's like a landscaper's candy store, isn't it?
No, well said. It is. It's just a great place. And the other thing is, they'll put people in business. I know they have you can just go in there and buy a trailer full of yard equipment and start your own yard business and make a low monthly payment, and you're in business. How about that?
Absolutely. Senator, listen, one other thing. We've got about 30 seconds. Here's an article that says Florida Sheriff's Department must remove religious decal, according to the FFRF, argues. It's the In God We Trust they're putting on their decals, and they're being condemned, and there's a fight about that. What is your stand on it, your thoughts?
I say, good gravy. Don't we have other things to worry about? Let me tell you, when those bullets are flying, that's what everybody's, we're all praying to the Lord that they will protect these men and women that are protecting us. So,
yes.
Dr. Blood, what a treat it was to be with you. I'll see you in Tallahassee. I'll be listening and I'll be reading. And just thank you, Dr. Blood, for what you're doing.
Right. And thank you so much, Senator Bean, for taking your time today to talk with us on Let's Face the Issue. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as we face the issues.
Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.